Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! It's over! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton. Some rhythm. And he got it! Young Ball continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Roan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Going well. I think you came in a little unconfident there. I think you didn't trust my countdown to live. And I think that you came in a little slow.
You know what it was? I actually hadn't pressed record yet. So I paused until I saw the little red light and then I hit record. Okay. I'm a professional. I know what I'm doing here. Semi-professional.
You know, speaking of professional, I haven't recorded on Zoom yet. So now I'm recording our actual podcast in case I got the edit because we haven't figured that out yet. So yeah.
Thank you.
Professionalism here.
Thank you for that.
Also, hi to our guest.
Absolutely. We're very excited today. Someone that actually does. He brings professionalism wherever he goes. Jason Maples, the coach, host of the Temple of Hoop podcast. How you doing, Jason?
I'm good. What's going on with y'all, man?
Just basking in some really, really good basketball. I'm team contract a bunch of teams that aren't the Cavs now, because when every team, if the worst team in the league is the Wizards and the Nets, it's actually not so bad. Almost every game is actually pretty fun. It's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's only been one blowout. It was that that Clipper Pelicans game, and everything else has been pretty competitive.
Such a fun experience, like the whole March Madness type thing, where there's games throughout the entire day. It's a weird mix because you have games that have been really intense. Like I think a lot of the games kind of between contenders or teams kind of on the fence have been really, really interesting. And then you also have those games that just kind of stick out like a sore thumb. Like Nets Bucks today was just. That's a disaster. Like Giannis barely played. Nets won. Nothing you can really take from that. There's the odd game that just has.
I love a good 19-point dog on a neutral court, though, man. What a line.
Yeah, I know some people in Vegas had to be pissed at that one. That was crazy. But the Bucks haven't looked great, though. Just watching them in general, just the three games I've seen, they haven't looked great.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news is they're going to get Eric Bledsoe back in the mix, and he always comes through in the playoffs, right?
Just that guy, 10 times out of 10.
Well, Jason, we're really excited to have you here. I want to start things off letting people know. First, tell them about your podcast. I'm excited to have you on because I feel like you're one of the people, especially on my timeline, that actually enjoys basketball. And that shouldn't be something that's rare. But for whatever reason, it seems to be rare in today's media climate. Tell people what you got going on there and plug your podcast. I want to do that on the front end here.
Yeah. All right. Well, basically just the people I interact with, just the people I follow, a lot of people I agree with or disagree with. And I basically started the podcast because I just wanted the people I interact with on the timeline to just get them away from that and just talk basketball 101 for like maybe 45 minutes or an hour around there, just about different things that are going on in the basketball. And I think it's just fun to get people away from the kind of the timeline, like nonsense sometimes, the trolls and stuff. I think it's fun to just talk basketball without that element there. You know, I love Twitter, but there is an element that makes it annoying to be on sometimes. We can all admit that.
Wait, so Jason, are you supposed to do a podcast to avoid the person who annoys you?
No, I guess people even if somebody
I think I made a mistake.
No, because even just the people I disagree with, man, just to have them on and talk about, you know, things we might disagree with. And sometimes it's hard to get stuff out only 140 characters, right? So you got to be able to talk about stuff just longer than a tweet. So that's why I started it. The feedback's been really good. I think Justin's helped me out with some stuff, like as far as getting it going with the editing side of it. So I just appreciate all the feedback I'm getting on it. So tap in Temple of Hoop. It's on Spotify, iTunes. It's on those two platforms. So please subscribe, follow, and just, you know, let me know what you think. I'm all ears.
But if I know anything about Justin, that he's the tech whiz of this duo. He's kind of our our audio savant.
You know what? I'm the idea man, Carter. You bring my ideas to life, but I've got some tech ideas. I can pull off something, Carter. Don't give me a little more credit than that, Jason. Do you feel like NBA media in general needs an attitude adjustment? Because I'm hearing what you're saying, and I couldn't agree more. And that seems to be the main thing. Like, I don't understand the level of snark. Like, there's snark to be funny, which I think is kind of the space that I'll operate in. But then there's people that just seem really, really intent on gatekeeping, and just they view everything through their narrow lens and basically dismiss anybody that isn't coming at sports in that exact way.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's actually one of the reasons I started the podcast. The last episode I just did actually was with the analytics guy, right? I've been anti-analytics at times. I had him come on and we talked about the discourse between analytics and eye test Twitter, right? There's got to be a common ground to come to as far as basketball. As far as what you're saying, yes, I think there is there's an elitist kind of vibe with guys who have established platforms as far as this basketball stuff goes. I just think there needs to be more of an open mind in terms of seeing the game a different way. And I think discussion will get better on Twitter, but that snarkiness does exist.
So you coach, correct? Like, you are coming at it from the active side of the game, you know, like, you know, there are a lot of, you know, armchair experts in the space. How does your coaching background kind of inform the way you talk about the game?
Well, I just say this flat out. I coach junior college basketball, and between the NBA, it might as well be two different sports. So say, And what I try not to do, I never try to throw my coaching in somebody's face when I'm talking about basketball. That's just...
Well, that doesn't sound like anyone else on Twitter.
That's sending the wrong message off top. It's like, I know more than you. I'm not going to listen to you. And I don't like talking about basketball that way. If there's something I can learn from somebody seeing the game a different way, I'm open to having that conversation. So I don't come at it from that way. Just being a coach, it helps me see things from a... maybe understanding stuff, looking at like things that are affecting the game, like team chemistry or players, or seeing stuff from a coach's point of view. Like, maybe I look at plays, sets more often, defensive schemes. Like, I look at stuff like that more so than like just actual highlights. So that's why I look at the game, I think, maybe a little different than a lot of what Twitter does.
No, absolutely. And that's one of the things I really appreciate about what you bring to the table, because it seems like there's a disconnect. Like, some people, they really prioritize, let's say, one-on-one guys. You'll have guys that don't really recognize the value of somebody that has a skill set kind of more kind of in line with playing five-on-five. Basketball is so difficult. And I think one of the things that we see is a lot of people are kind of lagging when it comes to really understanding what's happening out there, because it's free flowing, because there isn't stops and starts like football where, okay, you understand what this play is. You've had it broken down. Like, I just feel like, even though people probably don't want super in-depth breakdowns of the game, they don't want like all the minutia. There's a basic understanding that I think it gets lost, and a lot of times people just assume everyone's freewheeling out there.
Yeah, especially just the way the game is now with the four-out pace and space basketball. A lot of it looks like chaos, right? But it's really ordered chaos. You know, you got shooters going to specific spaces. You got drivers out in space. You got pick and rolls in certain areas. Like, you got teams hunting the corner three, right? That's where teams do. They go for the corner three. So you're right. It's a lot of it is order chaos, and a lot of it looks real free flowing out there. But yeah, like, so, I said, we need a Tony Romo guy for basketball. Like, how he makes the NFL game so easy to understand, but he's so entertaining. Really, we don't have that for basketball. But seriously, Tony Romo, he breaks the game down like on a level where the casual fan can understand. But basketball, we don't have that, because it comes off either super technical or. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, you know what I've noticed, and you mentioning Romo actually is interesting to me, because so you are coming, like, you downplay, you know, the comparison from your coaching to what NBA is, but you are involved in the schematics of basketball. That's part of your job, right? Yeah, is to think about the game from an X's and O's perspective. And you know what I've noticed is me and you, both big Cowboys fans, we actually joked about derailing like the first 10 minutes of the pod with just like Dak talk, whether they should have traded for Jamal Adams. But we didn't. But what I'm ramping up to is when you listen
Thank you for that. Thank you for that, by the way. I appreciate that.
We'll do it after. You have to stay on. But when you listen to a lot of football analysts, I feel like I noticed like a lot of the football blogging and Twitter community seems to be a bit more schematically aware of the culture. And I'm wondering, Jason, if you agree with that and if you think there's a reason for that. I mean, the biggest thing I can think of is it's a lot easier to make the high school football team than it is to make the high school basketball team. So you know what an A-gap is in a way.
Yeah, I was just going
to
say that. First of all,
in a way that your standard basketball fan doesn't know what a horn set is.
Yeah, because like that's absolutely true. Football, you know, you got 50, 60 guys on the team. Everybody's been involved in meetings or on the playing side, but at some point, basketball, there's less people involved. So less people who've been in the locker room or have seen the game or been coached to play the game. And I think also just football, Justin just said this a few minutes ago, the stop start of it, it's kind of easier to look at it in that box.
And separate plays from one another.
Separate plays. And so that's where I think a lot of the ease in understanding football versus basketball comes from. Not ease, because people do study these things. Sports aren't easy to understand, but just
and football is actually way more complicated, in my opinion. It is. Like, I have really a really hard time as really a complete, like, I never played football. Shocker. But, you know, you look at all the schematics. It's such a military game with all these very specific individual routes, whereas basketball is at least like a symphony to some extent. Like, everyone's working to do the same, you know, to generate the same look, whereas there's all this misdirection and a lot more – you know, technical stuff at display is very specialized in football. So
yeah, it is specialized. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, the expertise is so much better, I think, in the NFL community. Like, I listen to your average NFL podcast, like your Locked On NFL guy, and they know way more about schematics than I do about basketball. And I think I'm pretty well researched. Like, I do my homework on this kind of thing.
Yeah, I would agree. I just think we just need better. Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson are funny, right? But they shouldn't be calling NBA Finals games.
The stand-up routine in the second quarter.
Right. And my thing
What's the deal with leftovers?
Yeah, and my thing is, they talk about the game so bad. It's like, if you hate basketball, then don't call the game, man. It's like, they come off the game like it's not fun to watch. And I'm like, do you want to call the game or not?
I just think, you know, someone told Jeff that, like, the tangents are good. And they sometimes are. Yeah. Sometimes I'm bored and sometimes it's funny. Like, when we were doing our finals rewatch and he was talking about the O.J. Simpson trial in the middle of game three.
Middle of Cat Warriors, and he's talking about O.J. with a gun to his head. That was amazing.
So I'm not saying they don't ever have a place, but, like, I just think, like, ultimately, like, do you think that do you think in the end there's a problem with NBA discourse right now? Because I don't know about that. I vacillate back and forth. Like, sometimes I get really frustrated by the jumps of the world, but, like, I look at Van Gundy and Jackson as, like, they're just, like, clowning in a harmless way, whereas, like, you look at the jump and it's just constant speculation. And it's just, like, it's a show, like, built around click algorithms.
Yeah, it's soap opera, right? So right.
It's whatever's going to draw the most eyeballs, which I'm still offended that like, I wish I'd want to think more of NBA fans, but it is exhausting that's the fact that, okay, that's what's actually selling. Like, they have the traffic to back it up and people want to talk about where Giannis is going in 2 years versus in the next 2-3 weeks. Right. Like, I'd rather discuss what's going on right now, what the Bucks are going to do the next few weeks here as we go into this version of the playoffs. But it just doesn't seem like there's really an appetite for that. And I don't know where that's a failing for. Is that, like, just not showing enough enthusiasm, building up games? Like, the spectacle of individual games, it feels like it's really promoted poorly by the NBA.
I think that's where Twitter has done a really good job. Twitter promotes all around the NBA much better than ESPN and like Fox Sports One, right? Because, you know, Undisputed, First Take, The Herd, mm-hmm. what is it? It's LeBron, it's Where's Giannis Going, it's Kawhi, like just those three in rotation, right? Every day. Some, you know, we saw a segment on like LeBron dyed the gray beard. What's going on with that? And I was just like, are you kidding me right now? So I think what Twitter does is, no, seriously, like even Twitter, like for myself, like even the Brandon Ingram stuff, right? Like you guys with the Colin Sexton and Garland, the Sexland backcourt, right? So without Twitter, I think Twitter does a great mm-hmm. job of like promoting the small parts in me that wouldn't otherwise be seen by the rest of the sports world. So I think ESPN needs to take a page out of Twitter's book, man, just promote some other stuff besides the same three topics every day. I think that'll make the game easier to love by casual fans.
I do think this is where Justin and I are wrong because we complain about NBA Twitter a lot because we're bitter, angry men. And like, I think that where we're wrong is like, even when the discourse is irritating, it's at least like passionate, you know, like there is a lot of interest. There is a lot of love right. for the Utahs of the world. Like, you know, Jazz fans drive us crazy, but you know, like we also have a way bigger window into what that team is and what the psyche of that team
right.
span base is that. Because we, you know, we have the Dowsets of the world getting into fights with everyone. Sorry, Ben.
You know, we got Rudy Chamberlain, you know, Hakeem Gobert.
Oh my God.
Without NBA Twitter.
Wanted to get here because I find you fascinating to pin down because you love the Lakers. You know, you're a Lakers guy, right? Like yeah. at least, you know, for the most part, but you also love Ingram and Lonzo as your former Lakers, the children right. in New Orleans.
Right.
But then I feel like you really took a Rudy Gobert heel turn in the last like 3 weeks. You're out.
I think 2 years ago or a year ago. I saw a tweet from a guy who's very prominent on NBA Twitter who said Rudy Gobert was as good as prime, better than prime Dwight Howard. And that is when
I remember that one.
That is when I became super anti-defensive analytics. And ever since then, he's probably been in my crosshairs. It's no personal offense, Rudy. I just, you know.
Eclair Dampier.
Yes, it's your fans. I think because, you know, I'm a Laker fan. I saw what Dwight did. You guys were Cavs fans. You saw what Dwight did in 2009, right? Is Rudy Gobert ever going to have an effect on a team like that where he can carry a team or be the centerpiece of a team that goes to the NBA Finals? No.
We invited you on this podcast and you're bringing up 2009.
I'm sorry. You're right.
Here's a question. Is Rudy Gobert and all his teammates going to be absolutely jacked to the teeth with anabolic steroids, Jason?
That's true. That is a fair claim.
I can't. Good old biogenesis magic. Those were the days right there. How are you enjoying these games, Jason? Like, I'm really enjoying them. I find it fascinating. But have they kind of lived up to your expectations, or is the level of play higher or lower than you expected?
I was skeptical about the whole bubble at all from a health standpoint. Like I was nervous that it wasn't going to work just from a safety standpoint. It always was kind of sketchy about that. But after that cleared, I got to say, man, I said before, I was like, if they clear the health stuff and you guys get over the rest, you know, they've had 4 months off, so the legs are fresh. And I think the games were going to be really good. I think like 99% of the games have been great. So I think they're as good as I expected them to be. Those games, like, they're all entertaining, save for like a couple blowouts. But
I feel like the conditioning is a lot better. I think some of these teams, I know that my degenerate friends that have that gamble, and I would never do such a thing. It's legal in the state. But some of my friends have noticed that, you know, it's the best play right now is to fade teams on back to back. So that's kind of where you're seeing like the, you know, like teams just don't have their legs. But like in general, I thought it would be a little uglier. And honestly, the thing that's been the ugliest has been the officiating, right?
I was just about to go, the refs have been the worst part of this. I was just going to say that.
Like, I feel like there's a lot operate. Let's like not to do the super popular thing and play devil's advocate for officials. But with that said, like the odds are stacked against them in a way that is unusual. One, I'm sure there's a bit of extra physicality because teams are trying to figure themselves out yet. Still, they're still a little bit sloppy. You can hear every single smack, slap, and curse word.
Yeah.
And they don't have that extra, you know, like they just don't have that, the ambient distraction. Like they're super.
I got a question though. The excuse always, wasn't the excuse always, well, they're getting caught up in the emotion in the arena. There's all the crowds. Like that's going to impact bias and all that.
I think
there's no excuse there. That excuse is gone. So
no, you don't have the fans going, oh, but you also hear a hand smack an arm, you know, like in a way that there's just no way you hear sounds like that.
My thing with the officiating is I just wanted to be consistent. I understand that some games are going to be called tight, some games are going to be called loose, but this thing where they let, you know, they let a lot of, they call stuff tight all game, players adjust a certain way, and then later in the game, you know, they let a guy get tackled into the basket because it's late in the game. They don't want to ruin the game with the foul. I think that that's been the most annoying in these close games.
I mean, like Devin Booker got fouled on that game-winning shot.
Right. Like, they don't call it because it's late. Let the players decide. Like, he got fouled. So the fish tank has been really bad to me just in general.
Yeah, I think they just got to figure it out still. Like, honestly, like,
They're rebooting too. So.
And I would argue their job is harder than the NBA player's job in terms of like transition. Like these guys have been playing ball their whole lives in varying noises of gyms. Like these refs are used to noise and they have to now, you know, navigate their senses in a completely different way. I don't know. I hope they figure it out though, because I can't do these 50 foul a game. Like I don't even care if it's well officiated. I just can't. I'm an old man now. I fall asleep at 9:30 sometimes. Two foul calls in two straight possessions, and I'm asleep. It's not good.
You want predictability because you're a gambler, Carter. Like that's what it really comes down to.
I did a 5-team parlay of unders on the first day we were back, just seeing if I could go crazy, thinking it would be ugly. Like 4 overs, I got destroyed. My under theory got fucking wrecked by all these freaking foul calls.
Well, if you feel like you guys have a better handle of what's going on than Carter, sports are back, and so is your chances to bet on sports with Bet Online. Major League Baseball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start. Why is that still the copy? Major League Baseball has kicked off for a little while, but there's still
Bet Online always catches hell from us on these copy. We love you, Bet Online.
We absolutely love Bet Online. You know what? I'm going to blame our copy editors, whoever's sending this out. They didn't send an updated one. I'm going to blame that. But you can check out all the odds, futures, and prop bets, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, Bet Online sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and 7-time NBA champion Robert Horry. See what they had to say on what it'd be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
Jason, have you ever heard of DealDash.com?
I have not.
Well, you're about to. It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price you'd never believe. Again, I take issue with that copy as well, because you should know what you're bidding on. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electrics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Don't want to auction off a car. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at zero and only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. Jason, tell me you're not in, because I actually think this is a great idea. The kicker is that the auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer or the item is yours. So if someone pushed their car on this website and you put in a 1 cent bet and no one else notices for 10 seconds, you have bought the car for 1 cent. It's an amazing deal. If you go ahead and buy now, DealDash is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon sign up on top of their other discounts. Go to DealDash.com and use the offer code CHASE. Yeah, we got our own promo code this time, suckers. Or DealDash.fm/CHASE. That's DealDash.fm/CHASE.
There you go.
There we go.
I'm glad you got that one. Anytime there's spelling involved, I usually
Justin really has a hard time with the spellers, Jason.
Yeah.
he tries to go too fast and he trips himself up.
Yeah, it's it brings me all the way back to like elementary school when I have to read out in class and getting yelled at by Billy Madison. It was a mess.
So I think where we wanted to go next in this one, and I actually am culling this segment from the timeline of our guest, Jason Maples. He said on Twitter.com, pulling up the tweet right now, the Warriors warped our view of a championship team. If you look back in history, the majority of championship teams had a major wart or two that could have derailed them. They just overcame the weak points or the weak spots. None of these contenders are perfect. To that end, Jason, I thought it'd be fun for us to go through each of the contenders, identify their warts.
And, that's fun. Let's do it.
And decide whether or not they're going to sink them. So I think we can start with my personal championship favorite, the Los Angeles Lakers. Mm-hmm. What is their wart?
Finding a third guy that's going to consistently produce beyond LeBron and Anthony Davis. My thought going in is going to have to be a revolving door, but I think over the course of a series, you're going to have to need one guy where we can depend on him for 15 to 20 on a given night and to help to supplement what AD and LeBron do. And I think they'll be okay, but that's definitely a problem. And the other thing is they really can't defend off the bounce pretty any that well, but AD cleans up a lot of that.
I think that what's interesting to me is there's that third scorer that scares me. I just feel like my thing for them is that I'm worried about the lack of ball handling. Like they do not have dudes who can get them into their sets at a really high level. And you know, you look at LeBron's post stats, and there he is on the stream. If you're watching on Periscope, just bullying Royce O'Neal in the post. Like he's the best post up player in the league right now, in my opinion.
I would agree.
In terms of his ability to score, his footwork's way better than it ever has been.
And the passing is just insane.
And I'm worried against teams like the Clippers. And yeah, they've beaten them and they've been able to beat them at points of the series. But I'm worried that because of how dangerous their defenders are on ball, that he's not going to get to go hang out in the post and get clean entry passes. And that's really the Lakers' best avenue to scoring against an elite defense. What do you think, Justin?
No, I agree. Like, obviously, you'd want to have a little bit more solid guard play. The one thing that the Lakers do have, though, is they have high variance guys at that position. Like Deion can come in and he can create. Like he can be a game changer. Not only in his ability to create his own shot, he can create for other guys. He's able to kind of manipulate the defense and get them to collapse. The problem is you just wouldn't be able to rely on that with any consistency. I think that they have enough. It's just going to be coming down to a 7-game series, how the matchups are, how much they really need that in that particular matchup, because obviously LeBron's able to do a lot of creation for guys. But it's going to be whether Caruso, Deion, JR, whoever they're throwing out there. And you know what? Caldwell Pope doesn't get enough credit. Like I think if you're looking out of who's currently left there throughout the season, he probably has kind of been their third most steady guy when it comes to the rotation, which I don't know if he's going to step up in a major way. Maybe that's going to come from those high variance guys. But I do think that he kind of gets overlooked for his contributions this season. They stack up pretty nicely to what Danny Green has done.
Yeah. I'm just speaking of Danny Green, he's got to pick it up. Like the shooting.
You got conference finals, Danny Green, for the last little while, man, and that's a concerning thing, man.
Yeah, he's a sneaky, streaky guy. Like he's kind of reputed as like a guy who is always just going to be a knockdown shooter for you. But like I feel like he has gone through these windows where it's like, oh, Danny Green's just not going to make a shot for a couple weeks.
Well, I hope that changes because he brings a lot of championship experience. Mm-hmm. And if he's not playable, then that means that Caruso or KCP is out there, right? They don't necessarily have the experience he has. So that's also could be an issue. But I think you got to hit the nail on some head. Like outside the creation, outside of LeBron is obviously going to be an issue in finding the third guy. So I think you guys hit the nail on the head.
So I think now we can probably move on probably to the East too. To the Bucks. You mentioned that they've been a little underwhelming.
Can I take this?
Yeah. Justy, saddle up, Seabiscuit. So they've been a little underwhelming, kind of hit and miss since they've come back. What are your thoughts on their fatal flaw?
Budenholzer. who knows what, and like they give up too many threes. Like, I know it's by design. They give up too many threes. We saw it in Atlanta. We saw it in Milwaukee, and it makes me nervous. Like, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be a fatal flaw, but that is absolutely a crack in the ship's hull that could turn into a disaster. And you know what? It especially concerns me against a team like Toronto, where Toronto has the length to deal with a lot of what Milwaukee's doing. Like, I know we'll get into them a little later, but Toronto's one of the few teams where you look 1 through 9 down their rotation, all of them are plus defenders and can defend multiple positions. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have a team that it doesn't really have like that Lou Williams Achilles heel where teams can just target him in a playoff series, if it's a grinded out game and you're the team that's giving up wide open threes, that really kind of the variance goes in a direction where it makes you pretty prone to an upset. And I still think that Milwaukee's vulnerable for that reason.
Jason, I have a question that might lead to your answer, but I kind of want you to pick it up. Do you think that if the Bucks don't win the title this year, it will be because of their offense or their defense? Because Justin's clearly saying the defense, and I'm a little more worried about their offense against
the defense. Same here. For me, it's the offense. I think this Budenholzer is not a big adjustment guy. It's like, we're going to do what we're going to do, and if it works, you know, works. If not, then they lose. But at that, if they don't get help, consistent help beyond Giannis and Middleton, I think that is going to be a problem. Also, I've said this several times, I view Giannis like Shaq, kind of, where he can dominate a game physically, but because of his limitations, whether it be from a skill or a shooting, consistent shooting standpoint, he's going to need somebody else to maybe close games for him. So I wonder if Middleton can even step up to that and get that done for them too. So that's what I'm looking for the Bucks.
You're not comparing Middleton to Kobe just yet?
No. Not quite. Ty Wind is just on the pod today.
So Chris Middleton is not someone you could swap onto the 2000 Lakers and they could win.
Man, that was probably that's
is that your favorite Twitter conversation?
That was my most frustrating moment on Twitter when we did the 2 hours where guys were trying to sub in guys for Kobe and steal 3-peat with the Lakers. I was like, okay, but with the Bucks, can Middleton close games? Is Bledsoe going to disappear again? Just things like that. I don't know. That's their question mark.
It stresses – you know what really stresses me out about them in terms of their, you know, their contendership is that it just feels like even on both ends that a lot of times you can kind of like make them – you can throw off their rhythm. Like, I remember one thing I really liked about Philly last year was that no matter what style you played, when you played Philly, you had to play Philly style. You either won or you lost. Like, you didn't get to just go have fun against Philly last year. Like, you had to go – slug it out, slow half court possession. Doesn't matter who you are. That's the way you have to play them.
Philly's so miserable they make everybody miserable.
Yes, right. They do.
We love company. Misery loves company.
And I don't really feel that way about Milwaukee. Like, and watching that Houston game, I just thought, and I believe did Milwaukee end up winning that game? No, Houston closed it out. But like, there was so much of like Houston just did as they pleased. Like, it didn't always work because their system is messy with, you know, that incentivizes 11 Jeff Green 3-point attempts. But like, the fact of the matter is, like, very rarely does you know, Milwaukee ever make you really break what you're doing offensively. They just play that conservative shell. And I don't know. And then on offense, like, if you switch it, they just are like, what? Like, they can figure it out and they can get buckets here and there. But I felt like they lost that series last year on offense. And until I see Giannis, who has made strides as a passer, sure, but he's not an elite passer. When he gets trapped, the pass still comes out 10 milliseconds too late, and the rotation and defense and good defenses are able to rotate on those guys and shut off those easy threes that they get in the regular season. So I feel like their offense is still what scares me.
Mm-hmm. I'll say this. In regards to the Houston thing, it just so happens that Milwaukee wants you to shoot threes and Houston wants to shoot a bunch of threes. So I think it was just an ugly that's a tough
matchup. It's not a good matchup for them. Yeah. They don't like that for them. Yeah,
I think that's what that was. But I would agree the offense is the issue for me, man. Just when you make them take away what they want to do, which is, and you switch everything, it gets real tough for them in a half-court set, especially when you can pinch the floor with Giannis and make him – I think he's become a better shooter, but you want him taking 18-footers and 20-footers.
You live right? with it yeah. compared to the alternative.
It's not like sure. LeBron. It's not like LeBron where, okay, I can beat you with – I've beaten you with this shot before, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, let's swing back west and talk about
– Well, I was going to say on the plus side, at least they have a George Hill.
They do have a George Hill.
Never discount that. You got to remember it.
Let's swing back out west. Let's talk Clippers, a team that is weird.
Plays like they're in the third year of a three-peat.
Yeah, they do. And I don't know. What is their fatal flaw? Because I don't even know. I wouldn't you guys to go first because I'm not sure what I think yet.
It's just continuity to me, the main thing. When you've only – they've played less than 15 games as a whole unit. And then the trade with that, so I think it's even less than 10 with the full unit. That's tough to try to win a championship with. Mm-hmm. You establish no chemistry, no pecking order. The coach doesn't even have a rotation he wants to go with in big situations where we're going to put this lineup out there where we need to get a run. So I think just continuity is their issue, and I think it's a big one, which is why I'm not as scared of the Clippers as I was a few months ago.
Justin. Yeah, like continuity and coaching are the two things to me in this bubble kind of situation. Oh, right. I feel like that's going to be so important. Like that's a big reason why I actually, as much as I never really want to give Toronto credit, like I really feel like there's a decent chance that they can be competitive in this setting because they know each other incredibly well. Nick Nurse is probably one of the best coaches. Or he's doing one of the best coaching jobs this season. He's just at that elite level. And when I look at the Clippers, it's a lack of continuity. And one of the things I think makes it worse is they don't really – like Kawhi can create for other people. Paul George can create for other people. But they don't really have a guy that's his primary
right.
thing.
Yeah,
like
they
have a lot of guys that will go out there and they will get you a bucket. Lou Williams will go out there and get you a bucket, but they don't really have someone that's going to make the offense start to hum, that's going to get everybody involved yeah. and build up that chemistry. And I think it just makes me uneasy when I'm looking at them. Like, all of the talent is there. I just wish they had that one guy that kind of was the glue that brought everything together. It just seems like a collection of individual talent. Even though that is a very, very high level of individual talent.
Yeah, yep. I just to piggyback off that point, like it looks good when they're making shots, right? Like against the Pelicans, they were 25 of 47 from three, so the offense looks like it's humming. Today, they struggle from three, and you know, down the stretch, the offense looks just discombobulated because, like you said, they don't have a creator. So, mm-hmm. like I 100% agree with what you just said.
You know, it's funny because it's not like I just think like, you know, you put Rubio on the Clippers and then they make perfect sense because, like, I get it. You need, like – you know, they do have ball dominant wings like Kawhi, but the more I look at this team, the more I wonder just the extent to which if Kawhi is going to be your lead dog, last year's Raptors team was the perfect roster construction mm-hmm. for him. Because much like Kawhi, he's improved as a passer. He's very capable. He'll pass out of doubles when they're there. He'll make the read that's there, but he's not a savant. And, yeah. and if you look at that Raptors team, you had like 2 to 3 passing savants on the floor or team spacing savants, like a Danny Green, who's just like, I think a role player genius, you know, mm-hmm. like if the jumper is going in, he's playing at a very, very high level. Yeah. You have creators and smart ball movers that are good off ball cutters and ball movers moving the ball in rotation when the defense gets destabilized. Like Marc Gasol mattered a lot to that team offensively as a passer in the high post. Lowry, Pascal, Siakam, like all these guys are really like are plus passers for their position, and that kind of let Kawhi be an ISO star. Like I don't mm-hmm. really know, the closest thing to that on this team is Lou Will, and
the other thing was Toronto had an identity, right? Like they yeah. weren't trying to develop an identity. It was Kawhi fit into that DeRozan role because the Raptors kind of had their system and DeRozan was that kind of freelance guy. Kawhi just comes in as a much, much better version of that. That's also bringing defense. That is a top five player.
Yeah, right.
And Danny Green talked about it. He said even after they won the championship, it was still their own little cliques, right? Like they didn't all celebrate together as a team. It was kind of compartmentalized, but Toronto was a team that kind of had the structure to put up with that. I just don't know it. If this team that was just all kind of brought together at one time, there's very, very few examples of a team that's done that and won a championship without a lot of hiccups along the way. Like, it's there's usually touch and go moments that could have gone 50-50. And I think this playoffs is going to be one of those times where I don't necessarily know if the best team is going to win this championship. It's going to be whoever's the best in a 7-game series. How did the matchups come down, which kind of makes it a more normal NBA season than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah. I think at some point, you know, the Clippers, to me, they're going to be down 2-1 in a series that they're going to be favored in, and how they respond is going to tell me a lot. Like, I can see them being down 2-1 to a Houston or a Denver maybe, and then they have to.
OKC would be funny. OKC would be real funny.
That would be.
I wouldn't necessarily be stunned by it. Like, OKC has a lot of talent, and they're playing really well. I feel like they're a team that's going to push one of those upper seeds, and it's really going to be a pain in the ass. Yeah.
I think upper seed, you want to play Dallas in the first round. Like, they have 2-3, you want Dallas in the first round.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, bringing it back to the Clippers, I think that the other thing that, if we're really looking for warts, because I think that team is, in a lot of ways, they are tailor-made for the playoffs. They're super switchy. They can fuck up any good offensive system. Like, LeBron had a really hard time getting the kind of shots he wanted against them. But I will say the other big ward is Anthony Davis. Yeah, I don't think they have anyone to throw at him.
No match. Yeah. I think what happened, Anthony Davis had to realize it because he was kind of getting pushed around by Trez a bit the first couple games. And then when he realized, okay, I'm better than this guy, I think that
– And I'm 6 inches taller.
Yeah, right. Right. So I think he just had to realize it. But, yeah, that's an issue for them because somebody made a good point. They said the Clippers are built to beat LeBron. They're not built to beat Anthony Davis. And I think that was an accurate yeah. assessment of the
– So this is where I get to go on my rant because I was on Twitter about it, about how I really just didn't get the Marcus Morris trade for them. I thought that – Like, listen, yeah, he's reputed as a LeBron stopper. What do you need that for anyway? You already, if it matters and you don't have Paul George or Kawhi guarding him in a conference finals, then you're coaching
deserve to win.
You're coaching to lose.
Yeah.
Second off, no, he's not a LeBron stopper. He's never done a particularly good job at it.
That doesn't exist.
Yeah. And like Iggy, I said to you in the DMs recently, Iggy's the only guy who I give any credit for like really bothering him. Yeah. But and Kawhi, I guess Kawhi has done it back in that first title against Miami. But in general, it's not what he was going to do. And then it just felt like a weird set of resources because you look at their roster, you look at their bigs. Zubac, I know Twitter loves him. I don't trust it. I don't trust that his feet are fast enough in a real playoff series. And certainly they're not fast enough against Anthony Davis. Like, he cannot play in that series. If the Lakers don't play AD at the five.
Yeah, that's the thing. What position is AD playing? Because if you leave JaVale out there, Zubac's going to look like a top five center, which if you look at those head-to-head matchups, the Clippers are winning with Zubac and JaVale on the court at the same time. Because JaVale, like you saw yesterday, he plays – doesn't have a stat the first 17 minutes he's on the floor, which is hard to do in an NBA game at center, no less. But, yeah, I agree, man. If AD's at the five, Zubac's unplayable. And that hurts because he's their best defender.
So Zubac is unplayable. Trez is, I think, a very good defender, but he's a switch defender. He's not a and he's honestly would be a good post. Like, if they had Boogie Cousins, like, Trez makes more sense. Low center of gravity – can push him off the spot, but like AD's just too much taller than him. He could just rise and shoot over him with relative ease. And then you look at a couple guys like Jamichael Green, just not athletic enough. Mm-hmm. Marcus Morris got absolutely bullied a couple times in the post.
Yeah, I didn't get given up Mo Harkless, especially watching the first two Laker Clipper games. He actually played great defense on LeBron. I thought that was strange giving him up.
I just didn't think that was the play. Like, a couple of their mid-season moves were confusing to me because they traded for Marcus Morris, so now you have to play a lot of, like, lineups where – and I remember this – I had this complaint about the Celtics in their first year when they had Hayward, Tatum, Brown, when they really couldn't find an offensive identity because – like, they were playing positionless offense. Like, none of those guys could figure out their role, so there's just a lot of standing around. I feel like that's kind of what Marcus Morris is going to do. Like, he wants to dominate the ball. He wants to pound the rock in places where you'd rather have Kawhi pounding the rock.
Yeah, just I think what they were thinking was, when I saw the L.A. Clippers film, he posted a stat where Morris in New York, he was shooting 43% on spot-up three, just on spot-up wide-open threes, he was at 43%. So, in theory, I see what they were, like, trying to do there, but he hasn't been able to make a shot since he came to L.A.
And
so,
even then, that's
probably
never
doesn't
been...
help that LA doesn't really have anyone that generates spot up looks. Like, that kind of gets back to what we're talking about. Like, that's actually one of the issues I think the Cavs had this past year, where they have a lot of guys that can hit three pointers, but they don't have a lot of guys that can generate 3-point looks for other people. Yeah, so you're not a high 3-point make team.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that, like, that they're the team that we should love more than we do, and we don't. Like, I just think, like, there's just something off with them, and I just feel like they're not – they feel the most precarious. And here's my question.
Just for the record, Carter's being a lot nicer to Marcus Morris on the pod than he was in my DMs.
I said that he looked like – in that Lakers game, it looked like he had just eaten a stack of pancakes before the game.
He was – trust me, he's being way nicer.
Well, let the people know. Let the people know. I'm not
going to put him on blast, but he's being way nicer.
You can always put me on blast, Jason. I stand by what I say in the DMs.
Moving over to the East.
Well, actually, hold on. I actually want to frame this in an interesting way, which is, are there any more contenders?
Cut me off as I was going to make a joke. I was going to say the fatal flaw for Philly is they're fraudulent and they're not going to do anything. Right. That team hates each other and don't fit. Toronto is the only other one that I'd mention. Like, I feel like you absolutely have to mention them. And I think their flaw, if you can call it that, is that they don't have a top 10 player. And historically, you need to have a top 5, maybe like top 10. Like, I feel like it almost has to be top 5. There's very few precedents for a team winning without a top 5 kind of guy. And Detroit is kind of the only example. And people compared them to Detroit last year. And I think it's way more true this year, where maybe their system can overcome it. Maybe Siakam's going to take another step because I think he's kind of moved into that top 20 type range. And Raptors fans were getting mad about this today. I think Jonathan Sharks had written that they're getting it done without a star. And, we have two All-Stars. That's great, but that's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about a top five guy. We're talking about that Kawhi tier guy. And you're doing too much when you're comparing Kyle Lowry to Chris Paul. He's not Chris Paul. Like, that's okay. That's okay. It makes what you're accomplishing more special. And I it's going to be really interesting to me to see just a team that's that sound defensively, that's that well coached, if in this setting, which I think is the ideal setting for them, if they're able to overcome that weakness.
Jason is,
I got to say, you know, Raptors Twitter was so much more bearable before they won the championship.
You just didn't interact with them. You did not interact with them. That was the thing.
We just bullied them into submission for you.
Because before I got on here, I got the guy telling me, you know, Kyle Lowry is a top 10 most impactful player of the last decade. I'm like,
I didn't see this, but I'm assuming this was Doyle.
Yes, it's just
it's shout always, out Anthony Doyle.
It's always Doyle. I did want to ask in terms of, because I think most of us, anyone who really likes basketball, has some affection for this Raptors team. If you don't just dislike the Raptors,
mm-hmm. I love the way they play.
Are they a 2004 Pistons team? Are they a 2004 Pistons level team, or do we just kind of want them to be?
Well, here's the thing: that 2004 Pistons team, I think, they were so good defensively, it didn't matter about their offensive limitations. I don't think the Raptors are that good defensively. That being said, the Raptors are a contender to me. My issue is when they need a guy to do some like dirty scoring in a playoff series, like what Justin just said, your top five, top seven player, like, you know, ball stopped, shot clock's running down, I need you to get me a free throws or a bucket right now. I don't see that guy on the roster. Maybe Pascal has another level to get to in the playoffs where he can kind of become that guy, but I don't see it. That's the only thing that's going to hold the Raptors back. And the longer a series goes, those guys become more important.
Absolutely, especially when the two scores that, I mean, outside of Siakam's kind of going to do his thing, but like Lowry and Van Vliet, they really rely on that trickeration. Like it starts to go into that Houston territory, and we just don't know how that's going to be officiated in the playoffs. And
right.
I just think, especially in close games, like that's usually not something that goes your way. And I think they have the tools. Like I think they may be able to overcome that. But there might be some tough moments or close games that don't go their way throughout the run. And it's just whether or not that adds up and ends up eliminating them from the playoffs.
They defend superstars better than any other team in the league. Based on what I've seen, they defend superstars better than anybody else. With their length and switching, I think that's going to be a big help to them.
I think that's the biggest case for them. I know you said they weren't quite 2004 Pistons level, and you know that's no slight because that might be one of the best defensive teams
right.
of all time. But if you look at this Raptors team, what makes them special is that they can fuck up any contender's game on any given day in a very legitimate way. I think you're 100% right that they defend superstars better than anyone else because not only do they form a wall, they rotate so well. Like
yes, the Laker game, yes.
They don't even have any dumb players. Like, that matters. Like, the fact that every single player on their – like, every team has, like, one dummy. And, like, they just don't have that. Like, they don't have the guy who's going to run the wrong direction. And, like, that's why they beat Milwaukee last year. That's why I said that I was worried about Milwaukee's offense because unless you did something unbelievably special, had that preternatural – passing ability that you beat the double before it even came, like only really like a LeBron can do.
Yeah.
They'll double and then rotate, and you don't ever gain an advantage on them offensively, it feels.
So you got to beat them. They don't beat themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. It's they're really, really well coached team, and like that's my main thing in the Eastern Conference. Like, I just have so much more confidence in Nurse than I do with Budenholzer, and like that I really feel like that can kind of level out the talent edge or the talent gap a little bit.
And just to be clear, I wanted to note this. If there was a year for someone to go 2004 Pistons, and a situation for someone to go 2004 Pistons, isn't this it? Defending champion energy and confidence. So I know that they lost Kawhi, but they don't really care themselves. Like, they feel like they lost a ton.
They're trying to prove something. They're trying to prove something.
They have something to prove. Every other contender, all the contenders in the West are either deeply flawed or brand new and still learning how to play together. This is not like there's no buzzsaw for them to run into that I think they can't win. And that's why they're a contender to me.
Yeah.
So do we feel good about
anyone in the West?
I was asking, what do you guys, Houston's probably has the biggest divide among what people think. You got some people thinking they're going all the way. Some people think they're going to lose in the first round. Where are you guys on Houston?
I think, isn't it fair to say that we all think Houston can beat anyone, but they're not going to beat everyone?
Yeah, that's where I am. They can beat anyone. To me, it's hard to sustain that style where we're going to live with getting out rebounded by 30 possessions a game
for four rounds.
Sustain that for four rounds, let alone one series, right? So that's where I am with them.
Like, it would not stun me. Like, if they did pull it off, I'd be a little surprised, but it wouldn't be like, okay, well, what the hell? Like, where did this come from? But I just can't see it. Like, I just don't think that they have what it takes to do that for four rounds. Obviously, they don't have a center. Like, they're going all in on this one style. And I just think that there's so many teams, especially as you kind of advance, like, that have length that can kind of play that small ball style, but longer. And if they did make the finals, I think they'd be playing either Milwaukee or Toronto. And I think those are both very bad matchups for them. I just don't think that things aren't lining up their way. I just can't see it personally.
I can't either. And I honestly think that's where it stops though. Cause I don't think Denver, Utah, OKC, Dallas,
Boston, Memphis. Miami.
No, I just don't think the ceiling's there. I don't think that.
And Miami falls into the Houston category for me, where I think they can beat anyone, but they can't win four series.
I just think the offense is going to go dry. Like, that's like, what's the difference between them and Boston? Really?
Well, no, here's the thing. Miami, you can target Kendrick Nunn. You can target Duncan Robinson. You can target Tyler Hero. I think that's the difference between them and Boston. Like, Boston absolutely has the length. Like, Boston, I'd probably give the third best at odds of coming out of the East. I just have a little bit of concerns about their length. Wish they were just a little bit bigger, especially when you look at who they have to compete against. But that's a really good young team, and they should have confidence in themselves because they're absolutely ahead of schedule, and they have a really bright future in the East. It's just, I just don't think they're at that level yet. But I wouldn't be surprised if Boston, Miami beat any of the teams in the East. I just don't see it going all the way.
I think the only team that can beat Milwaukee is Toronto. I think everyone else can beat everyone else.
I think Miami can beat Milwaukee. I have some confidence.
I think that is the internet telling you, because Bam had one good game against Giannis, that he's a stopper.
You know what? Shout out Miami Heat, beat all my guys down there.
I think that's what that is.
You know what? Bam and Siakam. They're the two guys that really, really bother him. Oh, you know, I should mention AD as well. But those guys in particular really can kind of get up in Giannis's space. They have the length and the speed to keep up with him. And I think it could help out. Like, I don't love Milwaukee. I don't think they're that bulletproof, where a team with Jimmy Butler and Bam can't kind of prolong a series. And once the series goes long enough, anything can happen.
That's fair. Though I think you're wrong.
I often am. I mean, it's part of my charm.
All right, let's wrap this. I got to go help put the baby to bed.
Okay, we got to say goodbye. Being a father. All right, well, I wanted to thank everyone that tuned in and listened. I apologize. We had a bit of a choppy internet connection at the start there. I think it leveled out. Apparently.
It was just Justin. Yeah.
Well, then you better send me your damn audio, Carter, because I think I got some work on the front end of this podcast. But we really do appreciate Jason coming on here. Make sure you're checking out Temple of Hoop. Same procedure with his podcast as you do with ours. Rate, review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. And if you want to support our podcast, you can send a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and you can become part of our exclusive Discord chat. So big thanks to Jason once again. Thank you to all our listeners. Stay healthy, stay safe, and until next time, go Gap.